You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
Faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Laugh hard.
Run fast.
Be kind. Doctor, I let you go.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are going back, and I see back to the Fifth Doctor era. We are going to look at Black Orchid, and we are going to talk about this wonderful two-parter, which has some historical implications on Doctor Who, but we'll talk about all about that in a few minutes. But before I do, let us introduce our co-host for this week. Of course, we cannot name this man without having a howdy in our voice. Mr. Mike Gordon is here.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
I'm good. This isn't our first one of the, no, this is our first review of the new year.
Yes, because we did a couple weeks back, we did the Stephen Moffat
review
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, we were just talking.
Well, exactly. And it actually became part one.
we were just raving.
Exactly. We were just raving on it. But we ranted too a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that tone changes tonight.
Ooh, we will see. And speaking of we will see, Mary Ogle is here.
Hi everybody. It's great to be here.
Yes, you're back in your homestead of California.
I am, for a little while at least.
Okay, so it wasn't blown away or burnt down, right?
Well, not yet.
Ah.
We haven't had earthquakes yet, so.
Oh, Mary, you had to say that. I was trying to keep positive and not mention the E word.
Locusts. We haven't had a plague of locusts.
Well, you did watch what was on TV last night from Washington, D.C. You could have had that.
Oh. Well, I think we did have that, metaphorically.
Neither here nor there. Let's talk about happier things, and we will talk all about Black Orchid tonight. And, of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. We definitely want to hear from you guys. And you know what? Definitely tell us what you thought about this one. With the three original Fifth Doctor companions, you still had Nyssa, Tegan. Of course, Adric is still around. He hasn't been
for one more story.
Not for long.
Yeah.
Not for long after this.
Well, exactly. All he wanted to do in this one is eat. So we will talk all about that, of course, and definitely please write us, tell us your thoughts about this. Or if you want, call us. Yes, you can do that. 404-963-9057. You can help support the station by just clicking on the ESO website and going right to the top there and going to the Amazon.com link. Doesn't hurt you, doesn't help anything, but us. That's right. Us. It helps us put oxygen into the air. It helps Mary survive California. It helps give Mike another howdy for another day. You know, just the little things like that. So please, you know, shop Amazon. You know, Valentine's Day is not that far away. It's less than 2 weeks away as of this recording. And you know what? You could do all your wonderful, sweetie dreams of buying stuff for your best friend on Valentine's Day. That's right. You can do that. At least I hope you can. You know, Amazon.com, please. Or if you don't have a sweetie, buy for your pet, buy for your cat, buy for your dog, buy for yourself. Why not? You know, you deserve it too. You know, sometimes you are your best friend. But that's a whole different episode of Doctor Who right there. So we won't go down that path. So let's get started now. Black Orchid. We'll be right back. back to the 19th season of Doctor Who, and we are looking at the first storyline that of Doctor Who that was broadcast in two parts on March 1st and 2nd. So technically, a two-parter in 2 days. And let's go on. Is this your guys' first time of watching this one?
Yeah, it's my first time.
I think I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I blocked most of it out of my mind. So it was like my first time.
Okay, episode's done. Thanks. No, it was interesting. This one was interesting because it was the last really true, plain historical episode of Doctor Who, if you think about it. It was the first time they had done a historical episode on Doctor Who since Highlander.
Yeah, it had been a long time.
And this is the last one they've done it on the series.
Yeah, well...
And don't... All right, before we get people writing us, when I say purely historical, as in no sci-fi themes to it, really, other than the TARDIS, but... If you there was no like monsters or aliens or anything, it was all.
Well, there's a monster.
There is a monster, but it's based on science.
Science.
Exactly, but it's not. It's purely like a. It's like a period drama more than a sci-fi story.
Right. Right.
No, I get it. It's got like, look, it's got science fiction elements the same way Frankenstein has science fiction elements, right? If Frankenstein is the like the origin of what a lot of people consider the science fiction genre, this definitely has roots to it. And like, look, I'm going to say right off the bat, I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. I thought the historical elements were really kind of cool. It was something different. I like Doctor Who kind of exploring this. The BBC does these historical dramas really well, and so they look great. I mean, the atmosphere, the castle, the environment that they were in, the outdoor, the exteriors, just all looked fantastic. I was like, I want to go there. And on the DVD, they've got this bonus like then and now kind of stuff where you can go there and see all the stuff. And a lot of it hasn't changed at all. Like, it just looks really cool. So you kind of imagine this is what it would look like back then. And I really like this time period. And, also it reminded me of the Philip Hinchcliffe like era of Doctor Who, like with these, you know, dark things happening during these historic times. And I think if it was a smarter script, this could be like one of the best ones. There's some really neat elements in here. But yeah, I mean, they have trouble putting it together. I mean, it's still got John Nathan Turner's fingers all over it. So
sadly enough.
Yeah. And I think that's a big drawback for me.
Well, it was interesting because I was watching it and Judy walked into the room while I was watching it and she says, "Is this a new episode of Downton Abbey? I haven't seen this one." And it had the same kind of feel to it, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is what they do really well.
Yeah, I agree that the strength of the episode is the setting. They do a really good job of portraying 1920s Britain. The costumes are really fun and the acting is good in it. The script is terrible. It's really bad. But
I will tell you this, though. After watching this, I still do not understand cricket a bit.
How could you not? It was on the screen for like forever.
But it was kind of cool to see him like use those skills, right? Because I don't think we'd seen that. I mean, there must have been a reason why the Fifth Doctor chose this particular outfit. So it was kind of neat to see him kind of right at home in that environment. It would have been awkward if he'd been like, "I don't know how to play cricket." Like, it just would have been like, "Well, why are you dressed that way?" Of course, with the Doctor, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of, it kind of reminded me of The Lodger, where he plays football. I mean, that it was actually kind of fun, but it ran on too long.
It did. I mean, especially for us who don't really know. I mean, unless you know what's going on, maybe if you know cricket, you're like, "Oh, that was fine." But it was really suspenseful. But
jolly good. That's very cricket of them.
And, you know, you get your little, you get your sort of the typical plot device. I mean, we've even seen it with in Doctor Who, where they have, you know, a figure that looks remarkably like a companion or, you know, someone the Doctor's traveling with. And so that it doesn't play out as well as it could. As Mary said, the script is not good, but you know, the elements there, the outfits that they wear are cute. And you do get this sense that, you know, there is, like, the creators are like, we don't know what to do with three people in the TARDIS, like three companions. We have no idea.
Well, they do nothing with Adric.
No.
Besides one scene where he's stuffing his face.
Yeah, Adric is pretty much useless here. And, yeah, this is his, you know, second to last storyline. So you kind of would think that they would try to use him a little bit. But instead, you're right, he just kind of. He's like, I don't even dance. I just stuff my face. I just want to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting because, yeah, I loved in the, everyone was in their costumes and everything, and Adric still had to wear that darn star badge.
Yes, he still had it on.
Yeah, he wasn't dressed up at all. You're right. I was like, well, I guess it's a costume party, so no one, you know, really notices, but.
I was like watching that. I was just like, what the hell was he thinking he was doing it? But it was just like, okay, you know, all Adric did was like not trying to help. He danced a little bit really badly and he ate.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then.
And really, Tegan doesn't do a lot either. She, other than like hitting on an old constable.
Hey, she knows how to foxtrot though.
Charleston, which that just sort of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I'm from Trocken. Guess what we do in Trocken? We dance the Charleston. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was just like, it was funny as hell, just as, the whole premise of it. And yeah, it was kind of cool. There were two Nissas. And, you know, it was bound to happen eventually that somebody would run into like a double somewhere across the universe, you know, because I always love it when you've run into somebody you meet for the first time. You looks like somebody I know, you know, this is literally running into somebody, you know, but
yeah, I mean, that was sort of a theme running through it, the whole double thing, like the two Harlequins, Nissa and Anne, but it just, they didn't go anywhere brothers. With it. Yeah, the two brothers, but they didn't go anywhere with it. I mean, that's why I found this episode so frustrating, because there's actually a lot of potential here, but they just, every time there's an opportunity to do something really great with it, it just falls flat. They don't go anywhere with it.
Yeah, I mean, they bring in all these elements that are familiar, like the duplicates and the, you know, this sort of pulpy monster who ends up being like, you know, one of the brothers, spoiler. You know, a castle with all these dark passages that lead to danger. And, you know, they've got all this stuff. But yeah, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really meld together very well. And that's really the big drawback. I mean, I thought it was fun to watch. I don't think I'd rewatch it, but I thought it was fun to watch. I wasn't bored throughout. I mean, it's only two episodes, right? So, there's enough of Peter that you're like, okay, I'll watch. You know, I mean, Peter spends a lot of time in a bathroom just walking around back halls, but it's still like entertaining in some ways.
Yeah, Peter actually looks great here. It's really fun to see him walking around in the bathrobe. He's got his floppy hair. But, you know, and he does a good job with what he's given, but he's just not given very much to work with. I mean, I actually would argue that the real monsters in this episode are the mother and the brother.
Right.
I mean, they're keeping poor George tied up. I mean, he's not just in a room. He's tied up in a room. And, you know, also there's, you know, the usual sort of casual racism and sexism that you find in a lot of TV from this time period. And that's never fun to watch. I mean, I love when the butler is getting strangled and Anne just faints. I mean, come on.
Well, it's sexism at its best right there.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was watching it and while they were doing it, it was just like, oh, please. Oh, poor me. I fainted. And then as soon as she woke up, she ran right into the arms of the closest man by her.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was just like, yeah, no.
Oh, come on.
And
I did think that the element, though, I mean, they established enough danger that when George dresses up in the Harlequin outfit and dances with her and then takes her into the house and kills the butler or the servant there and then goes after her, I was like, wow, I just felt that was pretty intense stuff. I thought it was working for me at that point. Now, obviously her reaction and, you know, but we hadn't seen anything from her to acknowledge that she could do anything more than faint at that moment. So I just was like, yeah, well, that's who she is. You know, and then later on when the doctor appears in the Harlequin outfit and she's, you know, she's accusing him of attacking her and everything. I thought that those elements worked for me. Because they felt like they were earned. But yeah, there was the rest of it. Like I kept thinking that the South American guy, I can't think of his name right now, but
Lanto or something. I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Latoni or something like that.
Yeah, Latoni, I think is what it is.
Yeah, yes. I mean, the whole lip thing just looks silly.
Well, it didn't even look like a true lip thing. It's like, of course, the actor wasn't going to stretch his lip out for that, you know.
Well, and he didn't even talk like it was an impediment to him. He was just like, so how you doing? I was like, really? oh, George has gotten away again. Darn it. I was like, really? Because you do not strike me as, you know, and he didn't strike me as any sort of, you know, for being a guard or companion to George, he didn't seem like he was. I mean, that's the thing. It's like not only were they keeping George a secret, but they were keeping him just tied to the bed all the time. Like he's like, wow, what kind of life is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's horrible. That's, I mean, the mother really, she's a monster. Not only is she doing that, but she's so casual about the murder of the servant.
Well, and it would have been nice if we had seen like the doctor turn on them, like they're the ones who are the true monsters. But instead, at the end, he's like, oh, thanks for the book. I'm really touched. I'm honored by this. I'm like, you should throw the book back in her face.
Yeah, that ending was just so, so bizarre because it's this lighthearted ending where they give the costumes to Nyssa and Tegan and they're all happy about it. And then she gives the book to the doctor. I'm like, what the? They suffer no consequences at all, and they're horrible people.
Well, she was going to let the doctor go to jail for it.
Oh, yeah, she didn't care.
No, she didn't care. Oh, she said, what did she say? She's like, oh, he's innocent, so he'll be fine. Like, yeah, that's a big trust in the system.
Yeah, you've seen, read Marlowe's stories at this point, or Agatha Christie. No, it doesn't happen all the time. The one thing we did find out is that the butler didn't do it in this story.
Yeah, we found that out pretty quick.
But I think Lady Cranley is her name, right?
Yes.
She when she uttered this phrase, you know, about him being innocent, he'll be fine. I couldn't tell if she was ignorant about that or if she was just cruel about not caring either way. And then I just kind of decided, well, they really haven't given us much to go on. So I guess it's both. I don't really know. Like, yeah, it would have been nice if she was, you know, for Doctor Who's really, really good about casting and making, like, at least in some plots that are not very good, the characters are least interesting. And in this, you don't get that. You don't get any depth to anybody.
You don't. They don't give you enough time to care about anybody in the storyline. Maybe George is the most that somebody cares about.
Yeah, but even George. I mean, George actually. That could have been a great character. They could have done a lot with that. They could have. You know, there's a lot of interesting backstory there and motivation, and they just did not explore it at all. And even in the end, where he falls to his death, but it looks like he just sort of dribbles over the side. right? I mean, there's no, like, that should have been a big dramatic moment. I mean, he could have committed suicide. He could have had a big fight with the brother. There's all these things that could have happened, but no, he's just sort of like, falls over backwards and that's it. And well, nobody seems to really care very much about it. And plus, what happened to the fire? I mean, the house is on fire, supposedly. Yeah.
I did think it was interesting. I mean, if it was directed better and written better. I mean, like, George's brother, Charles. Charles approaches him like a big hug. Like, hey, bro, everything's going to be okay. And that's where George is like, no way, get away from me, you cruel man, beast thing. And like, ironically enough, he's the one who like recoils and away and is killed for it. But yeah, it's not directed with any sort of, you know, dramatic irony at all. It's just like, you're like, you said, it's like step flump, and then everybody just kind of looks and goes, yeah, that's him. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what they were trying to do, but they just, the direction was so bad. You just did not get a sense of that at all.
There's, like I said, there's a lot of elements here, you know. I mean, with the monster, you could have a sympathetic figure like Frankenstein's monster, like Phantom of the Opera, something like that. You could do something similar, but, you know, instead they throw all this stuff at the wall and they just kind of hope it sticks, and it really doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, this is there's a lot of tragedy here. I mean, poor George is suffering so much because of a freaking flower, and they do nothing with the irony of tragedy of that. I mean, that could actually, I mean, if you wrote it right, that could actually be a great dramatic arc for his character. But it's just, I mean, it's so lackluster. It's so mediocre. It was very frustrating. And you're right, it's not the worst episode we've ever seen. I mean, there are some nice moments in it, but it could have been so much more.
Well, it was interesting because the doctor didn't even go, oh, I've been all over the galaxy in my time machine, which he conveniently told everybody about. That, you know,
not only tell him, he like, hey,
let's go for a ride.
Yeah, come on in.
But the thing is, he didn't try to say, oh, well, there's a cure for this or something on Galifrax 6. Oh, they have the same problem and there's a cure for that. Let me get that for George, you know, or something.
That he could have like given back his tongue.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, I mean, he couldn't have. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm not sure. Maybe he could, but I'm like, I don't think, I wasn't looking for the doctor to do that. But instead, I was looking for the doctor. You know, usually in these stories, the doctor has sympathy for the monster as opposed to who the real monsters are, right? Like, this is a perfect opportunity for him to sympathize with George and then, you know, point the finger at the parents and at the family, like, how dare you? And, you know, unfortunately, poor, I've just drawn her name. Anne is not developed well enough that she's making, I mean, she's just going along with it, but I mean, she's been forced to marry like the one brother's not able to marry you, so here's another one. But we just popped another one out. So
yeah, well, you guys, you know, are all interchangeable.
Exactly. That's the same thing, right? You like one brother, you'll like this one. Okay, you're fine.
But this, I kept comparing the story to Crimson Horror because it's a similar character in the sense that they're both disfigured. But in Crimson Horror, you really care about Ada. And the compassion that the doctor has for her is very apparent, and it makes for this deeply moving story. And there's nothing like that here. I mean, the opportunity is just wasted.
No, agreed. I couldn't agree more. It was like there were so many different chances for this to be a great story. It just never caught any kind of traction for it. And that's what the sad thing about it was, because for a period piece, it was very well done. For story-wise, not so much.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost any more to make the story interesting. That's the thing about it. It's like, it wouldn't have cost them a penny more to make the story dramatic and interesting. I don't know how much they charge the writer. So maybe it would have cost a little bit more to get a better writer on this, but
they overpaid him, whatever it was.
But you know what? I don't mean to pick on, you know, John Nathan Turner and all that. Although certainly I think I've made it pretty clear that he's not one of my favorite showrunners, right? His whole run at Doctor Who, I find more or less that there are interesting elements, but I'm very few are satisfying to me, like completely. Like they're just not like, and this is, so I think maybe that's why I don't hate this one, because I'm kind of like, well, there was a lot that I liked about it, so yay. Because usually I come into these thinking these are going to be horrible. These are going to be awful, and I'm just not going to enjoy them at all. And so anything I kind of cling to, anything I can to be like, that's kind of cool. And I don't, that's the only era of Doctor Who that I feel that way. When I go to watch it, I do want to watch it. So it's not like it's torture for me. But it's the most uncomfortable I am watching Doctor Who, because I just, this era is not my thing. You know, I would, you know, give me the first Doctor, second Doctor, third Doctor, you know, fourth, and but fifth through the seventh, I just,
yeah.
and I know we're only getting started with this era now. Like there's a lot to go. There's a lot of stuff that we haven't recorded yet. A lot of review, like during this time period, there's a lot we haven't reviewed. But even this year, I mean, next month we're doing 6, then we're doing 7, and I'm like, oh,
oh no.
Oh yeah,
just make it through this, Mike. Just make it through this.
You'll make it through the 7, Mike. Trust me, you'll make it through.
Well, and some are better than others, you know. I mean, I do appreciate Peter's acting, his character as the Doctor. I do appreciate Sylvester's a lot more than I do Collins. So those are elements that I do like. And with the 7th Doctor, I do like the companion Ace a lot more than any of the other companions.
Oh, yes.
Cool. Like, that's the other thing that I think, in my mind, if Peter had better companions for me, I'm not hating the people who like them, because I know there's a lot of people who do like all three of these folks, two in particular. But I just don't. I think they're the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was younger, I did like Nyssa, and I liked Tegan to a point. Never liked Adric. But like watching this, it was just like, there's two companions too many in this story. It should have just been Nyssa.
I don't think we've come across a story yet where with the three of these folks that, and then they introduced at one point, well, no, is Harry after Adric?
Harry?
Not Harry, but what's his name? The guy that joins him for a little
Turlo.
While? Turlo, yes.
Turlo is way after Adric.
Okay, that's what, because yeah, then they get, but he's a little bit more interesting than Adric.
Oh, well, yeah, because he basically was a traitor. He basically was working for the Black Guardian.
Yeah, but I haven't gotten to that part yet.
No, you haven't.
Spoilers, thanks.
Actually, you have gotten it, because we did Mordrin Undead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the first one for him, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, are there any... I mean, we're just talking like, yeah, sort of off script here. But I mean, so are there?
We're always off script. What do you mean?
Yeah.
But in your mind, are there any episodes, probably ones that I haven't seen? Are there any episodes that are really like, okay, if you want to like Nyssa, you really should watch this story, because this is a great Nyssa story. Wow. There's like nothing.
Yeah, I've actually heard somebody recommend this one for Nyssa, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because she's in there twice.
Yeah, maybe so.
No, because... the last story with Nyssa, the name of it is blocking my mind at the moment, because I'm still in shock from this story. But but her there's some decent stories with her, and she really goes really well on Big Finish because there are stories with just her and Peter. Like we listened to one when we did Spare Parts.
Terminus is the last one.
Yes. But if remember, if it was Spare Parts, was a great story with Nyssa and the Doctor.
Yeah, that is a good one.
And so there's other ones where, you know, it's Nyssa, Tegan, and the Doctor, or just Nyssa and the Doctor.
Well, but outside of Big Finish, I'm just talking about, like, you know, just the regular series, because we've seen.
Well, Terminus is good because it also shows that she's a scientist, which she is. And that's what she was on Tarakan.
Because I did think that the resurrection of the Daleks was really a good, strong Tegan story. That's her last one. But I thought she was really good in it. And I think actually in the episode after this, the story after this, Earthshock. Tegan's kind of like, you know, kick ass, take action kind of person. So I'm saying that there are elements that I, even as much as I don't like Tegan, at least there's stories where I'm like, wow, she was pretty good in those stories. I haven't seen any of them yet. I haven't seen anything yet that I'm like, yeah, and this is okay. Like, I just like, she's supposed to be like uber smart. But I haven't really seen it that much. Like I haven't seen her be useful. And as much as, you know, it's kind of fun having two of her in this, like one is just, you know, this sort of flat, one-dimensional, you know, girl that just faints at the sign of trouble and doesn't really have a personality. And the other one isn't much better. And the other one isn't. Listen, no, you're kidding.
I was going to say, and the other one's Anne.
The other one is Anne. Right? But I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, and I don't want to hate them because I haven't seen all of their work, but I'm just sort of struggling because I just don't care for them.
Well, that's what the problem mostly was with Adric, was they never knew what to do with him at all.
Because, you know, we always talk about the companions that we would love to see, like characters that were in this episode or that storyline or what have you throughout Doctor Who. We thought that person would have made a good companion. Well, when I first saw Nyssa in Keeper of Tracking, and I did not think, wow, she'd be really make a cool companion. I hope she sticks around. And so far, since I've seen her stick around, the episodes that I've seen, the storylines that I've seen, it's just proven me right. I'm just like, she's just, I don't know why she was added.
I can't answer that.
Yeah, I mean,
so you guys aren't real big Nyssa fans either.
I like her, but I agree with you. She was not properly used, and I could, you know, but that's, you could say that about a lot of different Doctor Who companions. But
good,
yeah.
And but everybody's got their favorites, and I get it. So actually, I will put this to the listeners. Anybody listening, because I know there's probably some people that are listening right now going, Mike, you just haven't seen this episode, or Mike, you know, you're not a Nyssa fan because of this, blah blah blah. And I would like to know, like, if there is a Nyssa story out there that's like, yeah, this really shows who she is, and yeah, it's one that we haven't seen, let us know, because we've got a lot of time between now and when New Who starts, so maybe we can add it to the list.
You never know, or you maybe can come up on the station and talk about what your favorite story is. And it could be a Nyssa story.
It could be a Nyssa story. So, and it's got to have to be one that we haven't seen yet.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if the best Nyssa episode is one that we've already seen, then I'm sorry.
No, I'm thinking about, you know, there's a couple others like Arc of Infinity, both her Nyssa and Tegan are pretty good in it.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe Arc of Infinity.
Yeah, that is actually a great story that we haven't reviewed yet.
And I don't mean to keep picking on her, because I know that there are companions out there that I like less than this.
Oh, one of them was in this episode.
You know what? I don't put Adric there. I would put Adric higher than Nyssa.
Wow.
Wow.
I would. Because I've seen Adric do things. Like, he's actually
annoying,
you know,
things.
Yeah, well, he sacrificed himself, right? Whereas Nyssa's never done that. And he's proved useful on occasion with both Tom and Peter. So that I'm like, you know, he might be kind of annoying a lot of times, but there are times when he's right, and there's times when he's worked some stuff out that I get why he was a companion. But I just have not ever seen that. Like I said, I haven't seen that from Nyssa.
No, I agree with that.
And I've seen it from Tegan too. So, like, even though I'm not a big Tegan fan, I will acknowledge there's some episodes where she's had some really good moments. This is not one of them. But
I kind of like Tegan, actually. I mean, Tegan can be annoying too, but she, like you said, she has had some good moments. I can't think of one with Nyssa. I really can't.
I did, you know, a lot of it was in the beginning when she kept whining about how she couldn't go home. And I thought that was annoying. That got old after a while. But in this one, you know, she actually says, you know what, I'd kind of like to stay, like, even though we're on Earth, I'd kind of like to stick around. You know, I don't really want to go home right now. So, and I thought that was kind of cool. I'm like, oh, this is where she turns around. And then by the end, by Resurrection of the Daleks, she's like, I can't stay here because this is just insane. So I liked her growth. She actually grows through the course of her time as a companion.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I don't feel that Nyssa does.
She's no longer the airline stewardess on her way to Heathrow for her first day of work.
Like, out of the three, it seems like she has the most growth.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But she also left the TARDIS because of all the death and destruction that she was seeing.
Yeah, I really related to that in a way that I was surprised. I was like, wow, she's really taking a stand and not just sticking out. She's like, no, I can't do this anymore. That was a pretty interesting moment. Because you've never really seen a companion do that before. Like, we've had companions leave, but not because of, you know, they left because they, you know, something else or whatever. But this is one that actually was just like, you know what? What you do is just too dark and crazy for me.
Sure.
Despite the fact that, you know, this is so weird because it's such a dark time for the Doctor, but you've got these three kind of jovial companions and all these bright costumes and bright sets and bright outfits, that it's really a weird dichotomy.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. And it's interesting because, you know, this storyline was so, you didn't know where it was going. Even through the end of the first episode, you did not know where it was going. The first 25 minutes of this story, it's like until whoever was dressed up as the Harlequin, and you didn't know it was George at the time, whoever was dressed up as the Harlequin, you know, finally ended up killing someone in front of Anne. And it was just like, what? Where is this going? Because I thought it was an episode about cricket or a costume party.
Well, there's a lot of, you know, it's weird for only a two-parter. There's a lot of time that's wasted especially in the first half.
Yeah, there is a lot of filler here, which is kind of strange since they really have such a short time.
Yeah, before they even play cricket, they spend, and to look at the deleted scenes, there was even more of it, but they spent so much time just in the car traveling to get there. And I was like, wow, this is like, they're just wasting time.
I actually did feel kind of bittersweet watching Adric here, because Adric's just doing what sort of a typical teenage boy does, which is eat everything in sight.
Yeah, there's not much for him as his character to be attracted to by this. Like, you know, I mean, he's not into fancy parties. He's not into costumes. He's a science kid and science.
Yeah, he's the nerdy kid.
Right.
He's not even to girls or boys or whatever.
Aliens. But yeah, and then knowing that he dies in the next episode, you know, it was actually kind of sad watching Adric here, but then he's annoying in the next episode, so I was ready for him to go.
Ooh.
That's a kind of interesting note, too, whereas out of the three of them, Tegan is the only one that even has like a spark of sexuality about her. Well, the other two seem really bland about relationships, intimate or otherwise.
Yeah, Tegan's even a little flirty here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's all over the constable guy.
Mm-hmm.
or sergeant or whatever his name.
Yeah. But Anne doesn't have chemistry with either of the brothers. She should just go off and, you know, go do something else, Anne.
Well, she looks half asleep during the whole, like a lot of it. She just sort of reminds me of that character in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's like, but I don't like any land, Father. Like, I didn't want that. You know, she just sort of like just this sort of trapped into this marriage that she just doesn't want to be any part of. But we don't really know that because we don't get to know her that well.
No, exactly. And it was like funny when they were trying to figure out where Nyssa was from. Oh, you must be related somehow to Anne. And it's like, no. And she says, I'm from Tarakan. It's like, oh, is that over by blah, blah, blah? It's like, yeah. It's like, oh. Hey,
whatever.
This sort of thing bugs me because these people should know to mask where they're from. Like, and they don't, they seem like, oh, I can just tell you that I'm from another planet. Like, it just, like, that doesn't make any, like, I hate that because they should know better. They should be like, yeah, we're from, you know, down south or something. Like if they don't know the geography of the place, they should at least try to mask that they're aliens, or that they, it just seems kind of silly to me when the doctor too is like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to be honest with you, I'm a Time Lord. Like, that's gonna mean anything to this,
right? That's just, yeah, that's totally meaningless thing to say. And then he just casually shows them the TARDIS and invites them in.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we don't have the key. I do. Let's have a party.
And it's like everybody's so flat here. There's no emotion at all. And it's just the guys go into the TARDIS and they're like, oh, okay. And then, you know, to them must seem like magically taking them back to the house, and they're like, oh, okay. I mean, there's no wonder, no awe, no fear. I mean, the only real fear you see is Anne, and even that's so over the top that it almost comes across as fake. So, and I don't think it's the actor's fault. I think it's the director's fault and the bad writing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And looking at the bad writing, it's just like, wow, this makes Trial of a Time Lord look great.
Next up.
Exactly. Woof. Woof, woof, woof. But in truth, I can't really say much more about this. I think we're starting to go in circles in some points, and which felt like the story did in any way. And, you know, so we might as well go ahead and rate this 1 out of 5 TARDISes, and any final thoughts you could put into with your rating. So, Mary, you get to go first.
Oh, boy. You know, despite my ragging on it, which I know I did a lot of, there were some nice moments in here. The actors did the best with what they could. And the 1920 scene is actually a lot of fun, just watching that and the costumes and the setting. So I think I'll give it a 2.5. It's very mediocre. It's very middle of the road, but it's only 2 episodes, and parts of it are kind of fun to watch. So the story is terrible, but you can still enjoy it on a level, you know, just watching the scenery level. So I'll give it a 2.5.
Okay. Mikey?
That sounds fair. I don't know if I can give it an actual 3. While watching it, I, you know, it's one of those ones that just kind of happened. I was just watching it. I didn't hate. The more I think about it, and, you know, when you think about wasted potential and all that, then it gets lower and lower. So, I, you know, 2.75, somewhere in there, I think, is where I'd put it. You know, there are still ones out there that I feel like stronger about is that I don't like Ghostlight. I did look up Mr. Terrence Dudley, who wrote this script, and he wrote 2 other scripts for Doctor Who that were produced. One is called Four to Doomsday, and the other is The King's Demons. Now, I haven't seen either one of those.
Yes, you
I can
have.
Tell you.
Yeah, you have.
You have.
Wait, we did?
You saw King's Demons.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was that?
That's the one that introduced Chameleon, the robot.
Oh.
Yeah, we all know how well that one.
I didn't know the name of that one. Wow. Okay. Yeah, I can kind of tell that he's got a thing. Yeah, I'm not eager to see his third one. The one I haven't seen, Ford to Doomsday. Yeah. I'm not eager to see that one. But based on his other, the record of his others. But in any case, yeah. I'm not going to harp on it. We'll say 2.5 as well.
Okay. Wow, that's tough for me because I always like to say I'm never going to go below a 3, and I'm not in this one. I am going to give it a 3, mostly for the period piece. It taught me so much about cricket. Still don't understand it, but it was great to see Peter so enthused into playing it. And it's like when he hit the ball, it was like, why isn't he running the bases or whatever, you know? And it's just like, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, that's, I guess, some ways when people in the UK watch American football, it's like, that doesn't make sense to us. So it's just interesting to see. And I love the period piece. It felt, you know, in parts, I felt like I was watching an episode of Downton Abbey with the Doctor in it.
Yeah, I'd love to go to that castle. That just looked really cool. Manor, whatever they call it. Because it was that, it had a cool look to it. Man, just to be able to like shoot on environments like that must be awesome. Like, oh, we'll just go here and shoot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's just interesting to see how it was laid out, how the story was. And I just... Yeah, I have to give it a 3. I can't give it anything higher, but I won't give it anything lower. And, you know, just for the costumes and the feel of it and, you know, the silliness of it, it just was like, okay, this is the longest 2-part episode I think I've ever watched. So, and, you know, I think we are right now at the 45-minute mark. So I think we're about right at how long these episodes are together. So I think we're going to start wrapping this one up.
Whew. Excellent idea. Jolly good.
Cricket. It's cricket. So we are wrapping this up and we want to hear from you guys. Please write us eswpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thank you guys for our numbers. They are still creeping up slowly but surely. Please, please, please tell your friends about us. Tell your neighbors. And also while you're doing that, have them subscribe to us up on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Google Play or wherever fine podcasts are found. And, you know, ESW is up there as our station who definitely could find us and, you know, rate us, give a subscription. And I think it's a great idea for, you know, just everyone to love us. That's all I could ask for 2018. Just love us and, you know, support us and, you know, and, you know, speaking of supporting us, next episode, we will have some big news about how you can support Earth Station Who and all the other ESO network shows. Got some big news on the way. So you guys will be able to help support us even more. And, you know, we want to be kept podcasters. That's it, right? Right, guys?
That's not asking too much.
No, not at all. You know, we'd love to be doing this for a living. So with that being said, we will be back again in 2 weeks. That's right. And friend of the station, Bobby Nash, the award-winning author himself, will be joining us. And he has picked an amazing episode of Doctor Who for us to talk about. And we are going to be talking, ready for this? We are going to the 10th Doctor era, and we are going to be looking at Gridlock with the Doctor and Martha. So it's going to be actually a lot of fun to watch that episode. I actually probably have not watched that one since it first aired. So it should be a lot of interesting stuff. And thank you to Bobby for picking that for us. So we are set for that. So until then, you know, my name is Mike Faber and we'll see you here next time on your Station Who podcast. Thank you, Mary and Mike, and we'll see you next time. Peace. And we're done.
Woo-hoo!
Yes, and we're 49 minutes, just like those two episodes were.
Thank God it wasn't a 6-parter.
Oh.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Interrupting my intro.
Is this a joke?
This is no joke, kid. This is the Earth Station DCU podcast.
No clothes on anybody. Sickening.
We're not that kind of podcast, kid. We talk DC news, comics, movies, and television.
You gotta do better than that.
We reviewed Supergirl, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow every week.
That a fact. How much do I owe you?
You don't owe us anything. The podcast is free.
Oh, I just heard this story in the cab, and it is all I can think about.
We are part of the ESO Network.
This is amazing.
Why, thank you. And join us every week for another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Now, can we get back to the show, please?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.